It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You're all right.
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
Protests here in Atlanta have been largely peaceful, but there have been some isolated clashes between the demonstrators involving gunfire. You just mentioned one. Demonstrators say a man tried to drive into the protesters and they opened fire on that vehicle. But the driver has another story. He says, well, he tried to drive away because gunfire ensued. Police are investigating that incident. There was also another incident, gunshots near the Wendy's, where Rayshard Brooks was shot and killed by police. It left one woman injured. She got hit by gunshots. The Wendy's has become a memorial guarded by some protesters with guns. Meantime, though, protests continue. Last night, an American flag was burned outside of the police precinct Zone 3 here in Atlanta. Though we've witnessed many peaceful protests in the last 5 days, protesters say they will continue marching until justice is carried out for Rayshard. Meantime, police are continuing to look for this woman, Natalie White. An arrest warrant was issued by Atlanta fire investigators yesterday. She's one of multiple people suspected of burning down the Wendy's in the hours after Brooks' death. It now appears the woman had a personal relationship with Rayshard Brooks. Listen to Brooks say Natalie White was his girlfriend on the police body cam footage from that night.
This is University Avenue.
Yep.
I grew up here.
Okay.
You know, Natalie White, she's my girlfriend.
Okay.
She left off. I said, babe, I'm going to get Wendy's and I'm going to go back to where.
Meantime, yesterday, Interim Police Chief Rodney Bryant here in Atlanta acknowledged that officers are calling out sick in unusually high numbers, and he implored them to show up to work for their colleagues while also empathizing with how they are all feeling.
The explanation for calling out sick vary and include officers questioning their training, officers being challenged and attacked, and unease about officers seeing their colleagues criminally charged so quickly. Neither APD leadership nor the administration are dismissive of these notions.
All right, that was Brian Yenis last night on Fox, and that was what was happening in Atlanta last night. Meanwhile, in Wisconsin, this is really interesting. In Madison, Wisconsin, the state capitol was bubbling with protesters. You know, Madison is the center of the beginning of Marxism, or one of the beginnings of it in this country. It is a hotbed of leftist Marxist thinking. It has been for, 100 years. I may be exaggerating. I'm not sure it's 100 years, but I think it probably is. And that's where much of the thinking and much of the influence in this country came from was out of Madison, University of Wisconsin. So it's not a surprise that they would have Marxists marching in their street doing damage. But interestingly enough, a Democratic senator, state senator Tim Carpenter, raised his camera and wanted to take a picture as they were starting their protest. They had bicycles, and you see this very large female and another female running toward him, and they just smack him. And what ensues is a huge fight. About 8 to 10 people started kicking him and attacking him. He was very, I don't know how serious, not death-threatening, but seriously wounded. In fact, his eye socket, he has, broken... I should not put words in his mouth, but broken parts, let's just say. And there are pictures of him lying next to his car and kneeling next to his car, not able to get into it. And so it's just amazing. He's a Democratic senator. All he did, you can see it in the video, he just wanted to take a picture. But it didn't work. The protesters were not having any of that. Meanwhile, I just got this in my inbox just before we started this morning. In the plaza by the White House, where the protesters have set up their, black house autonomous zone, Andrea Mitchell and Congresswoman Eleanor Holmes are almost attacked. You see it in a video. So I don't have much more detail about it than that. But that, like I said, that just came into my box So we can see that things are really, really getting serious as though they weren't already. But it's more widespread. And in fact, for those of you in Northern Virginia or around D.C., something is happening tonight at the Emancipation Memorial. And it features Abraham Lincoln standing with a slave next to him. And the whole idea of this was dedicated. It was a monument made to as a tribute to Abraham Lincoln or to the emancipation of slaves. So there's a slave next to Abraham Lincoln, and Lincoln has got his hand reached out over him. And that's offensive to Black Lives Matter. Of course, anything American, anything about our history is offensive to Black Lives Matter, the Marxist, communist organization that has nothing to do with taking care of Black lives. I hope that you hear me. I have to repeat that every day if I need to. For those of you that are Black, they do not represent you. They do not. They are all into transgender rights, destroying the natural family, and establishing Marxism and destroying the country. They're very clear about that. Just read their, they lead with Black Lives Matter, because who could argue with that? But they don't mean it. The people behind them are not even necessarily Black. So please be careful. And those of you who have corporations, Walmart donating, what, $250 million to Black Lives Matter? That's a subject for a different day. How dare they? How ignorant of people to be so blind and so cowed by political correctness that they can't make a distinction here between protecting and defending and advocating for the eradication of racism from all races and having to sign on to a Marxist movement that's doing what it's doing in our streets. Shame on us for being so ignorant about that. And so I'll get into that on another day. But this particular memorial, the Emancipation Memorial, last night, a Black gentleman got up on the side of it, and this is what he had to say. Let's listen.
So, now, our team today, some of my members out here, we don't want to tear down the statue today. We understand. We don't want to do it today. We are going to be doing it on Thursday at 7 p.m., okay? Thursday at 7 p.m. Say it. Thursday.
At 7 p.m. Yeah.
Okay. So we are going to be out here. We want you to share it. We want you to follow us, which is at The Freedom Neighborhood on Instagram. We want you to get involved. We want you to donate in any way you can to help us get supplies, to get all this done so we can do even bigger events in other areas. We are trying to be at the Supreme Court and do sit-ins there. We're trying to be at Mitch McConnell's house. So we're not going to be just sitting idly on the side going to Black Lives Matter Plaza. No, we're not doing that no more. We are going to show up and wake these rich white people up.
Yeah, so this tonight is 7 o'clock. Now, some people that I know are going, and I'm thinking some of you might want to go. I don't know what that means. I just mean, you know what? At some point, we have to kind of stop this. What do you think? You think we should just let this happen? This is a Black Marxist, Black Lives Matter Marxist, and he's talking to, as I watched in the video, it looked to me like a mostly white, like your kids, college students, or just after college, listening to him. So they're taking their marching orders from the Black Marxist and repeating, you know, chanting, you know, what time? Seven, you know, repeating, chanting, giving out warnings. So a lot of people I know are going tonight. They're going to go. I don't know what they're going to do, but they're going to go because they don't like this. Abraham Lincoln freed the slaves, for heaven's sake. And what they're trying to do, of course, is erase American history for their own purposes. I want to say this, just so you are not completely discouraged. We now have Congressman Chip Roy and others who are signing letters to the Justice Department, Steve King, Louis Gohmert, Jeff Duncan, Andy Harris, Ted Budd, asking the Justice Department, just spelling out in great detail what they were asking of them. Also, Tom Cotton in the Senate is doing the same. And now we know that actually the DOJ has been really busy with an indictment spree against violent anarchists. And I know of Philadelphia, Las Vegas, Oakland, California, and I'm sure other places. That's just an overall view. So they are taking action, and God willing, we'll see some of these people brought to justice, and maybe we'll see a stop to some of this. But that is taking place. All right. In another interesting twist of things. You know, I'm sure that you saw NASCAR drivers walking around the only black driver, Bubba Wallace, in solidarity. I don't know, was it over the weekend, I think? And I, you know, the story is that a noose showed up in the garage where he has his car. And, of course, the story is that Bubba was targeted because he's the only black driver, and somebody hung a noose in his garage, and he was crying and weeping, and it was interesting. And the drivers responded by coming alongside him and doing this, like, march down the speedway. And when that happened, I have to say, who does that? Who thinks that a noose, I mean, that's just, I guess silly is too trite a way to put it, because I know it has implications, but who does that? The only time you see that done is like in scams. I don't think anybody seriously thinks that's a threat now. Maybe they do, but it just sounded weird to me. Well, now we know it is weird. The FBI came out with their statement and said that they've learned that garage number 4, where the noose was found, was assigned to Bubba Wallace last week. Investigation revealed evidence, including authentic video confirmed by NASCAR, that the noose found in the garage number 4 was in that garage as early as October 2019. The FBI has completed its investigation at Talladega Superspeedway and determined that Bubba Wallace was not the target of a hate crime. The FBI report concludes, and photographic evidence confirms, that the garage door pull rope, fashioned like a noose, had been positioned there since as early as last fall. So Bubba Wallace is sticking to his story, still claiming, oh, everyone knows it's the noose. And I have to say, this is going to be very controversial, what I'm going to say, but when I saw him weeping the way he was, and I already thought this was kind of a odd story, who would do that now? I mean, why? I mean, there are other ways to express racism that are more impactful in this current time. Not that I'm full of suggestions on that, but it's just a... and I thought, is this a Jussie Smollett? Is Bubba a Jussie Smollett? Did he not know? Did he not suspect that that maybe wasn't geared to him and he made much of it? That's what it seemed like to me. And I'll just say it because that's the way it seemed to me. Okay, I guess I do want to say something about the coronavirus, because we're hearing, you know, all these reports of how horrible it is. And I just want you to know a couple of things. First of all, there are tons of cases. That's because we have tons of testing. So cases don't mean anything. Most people that are testing positive have no symptoms. Most of them never get sick. And in fact, I'll read to you. This is Daniel Horowitz was looking at what was happening in Tyson Food plants in Arkansas. Hundreds test positive at Tyson's food plant in Arkansas. That's the headline of an AP article on Sunday. And it was alarming. However, the real headline is that although 13% of the Tyson Food employees in Benton and Washington counties tested positive, 95% of them had absolutely no symptoms. 26 of the 481 who tested positive did present some symptoms. And in the Berry Street facility, which had the largest number of cases, 223 out of 227 who tested positive had no symptoms. They were asymptomatic. See, the point is that we are doing testing. We're finding out people are catching this very contagious thing. They're carrying the bug for it, but they're not getting sick. It's like it's the immunity process working. We all carry stuff in our bodies. We will never not carry germs in our bodies that cause disease, but maybe never develop into that. That's kind of what herd immunity is all about. This is actually very good news. We have very few people dying. The hospitals are filling up, because there has been a delay in procedures in hospitals. Remember, you could not get into a hospital for about 3 months. That's why the hospitals are filled. So when they say, oh, the cases are up, the infections are up, and the hospitals are filled, that is just completely twisted, twisted reporting to get you alarmed. And that's what's happening all over the country. That's what happened to discourage the rally in Tulsa, Oklahoma on Saturday night. Okay, you're in for a really interesting segment coming up. A new Facebook whistleblower. Stay tuned. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
This is good news, maybe exactly when you need it to. Right now, MediShare is waiving their new member fees. This could save you money on top of all that you'll save each month by becoming a member of MediShare. So many people are looking for a healthcare solution right now, seeing the cost of COBRA plans, for instance, and MediShare is the affordable alternative to health insurance. The typical family saves $500 a month. You might save even more. MediShare is a Christian community that shares each other's healthcare costs, and because of the current economic situation, they're making it easier than ever. Apply by May 30th, and you can save an additional $170 on your first month. I'll give you the number here in a second, and if you call, you can get a price within 2 minutes. Just tell them the promo code SHARE to receive your additional savings. Maybe now is the time to make the switch, like more than 400,000 people already have, and start saving. Here it is. Call 833-44-BIBLE. That's 833-44-BIBLE. 833-44-BIBLE.
This is Pause to Pray, a chance to stop down from the daily noise of life and pray for our country's leaders.
Today, we pray for Lieutenant General Charles Hooper, Director of the Defense Security Cooperation Agency. His office provides financial and technical assistance to allies, as well as the transfer of supplies, equipment, and weapons. Luke 9:50 reminds us of the importance of supporting our allies. But Jesus said to him, "Do not stop him, for the one who is not against you is for you." Right now, with this in mind, let's pray together. Almighty God, we ask you to guide Lieutenant General Hooper as he works with our allies around the world. We ask this in Jesus' name. Amen.
Pause to Pray is a service of this station and the Presidential Prayer Team, a nonprofit, nonpartisan ministry dedicated to encouraging prayer for our nation's leaders. To learn more, go to pausetopray.org.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next.
These challenging times have shown a college degree is more important than ever. But if the loss of Virginia's tuition assistance grant for certain new online students is holding you back, Liberty University is here to help. We're stepping in to replace your lost VTAG funds with our LU Tag Award and combining it with a $3,600 undergraduate transfer student scholarship or our already low first responder and military discounts to save you up to 60% on your degree. We've got this, Virginia. Learn more by texting LU Tag to 49595. That's LU Tag to 49595.
A. Maria Jones was showing her mom a new dance move the other day, the TikTok. The 13-year-old loved to dance, wanted to be a lawyer when she grew up. But A. Maria's dream was shattered inside her family's home on Chicago's West Side. She was gunned down inside the living room, the bullet believed to have come from a passing car. She bled out in her mother's arms. A. Maria was one of more than 100 people who were shot over the weekend in Chicago. More than a dozen people died. Senseless violence, bloody carnage, evidence of a morally bankrupt culture, an example of what happens when you tell the police to stand down. There were no protest marches, no candlelight vigils for A. Maria, no nationally televised funeral service, no fiery sermon from Al Sharpton, no tearful eulogies on the cable news channels. That's because the story of a little girl who died in her family's living room while she was dancing, it doesn't fit the mainstream media's narrative. I'm Todd Starnes.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the Morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
You plan on doing no fact checking on political ads.
Chairwoman, our policy is that we do not fact check politicians' speech. And the reason for that is that we believe that in a democracy, it is important that people can see for themselves what politicians are saying.
You announced recently that the official policy of Facebook now allows politicians to pay to spread disinformation.
There's imminent risk of harm.
Could I run ads targeting Republicans in primaries saying that they voted for the Green New Deal?
I don't know the answer to that off the top of my head. I think
so. You don't know if I'll be able to do that.
I think probably.
Do you see a potential problem here with a complete lack of fact-checking on political advertisements?
Well, Congresswoman, I think lying is bad, and I think if you were to run an ad that had a lie, that would be bad.
All right, that was the voice of Mark Zuckerberg, who, of course, is the founder and chair of Facebook. Facebook is something, there are a lot of social media platforms, but probably everyone listening to me has familiarity with Facebook. It's a worldwide platform. It has such tremendous effect on speech as we communicate with each other, you know, socially, but also in terms of gathering as groups, organizing different kinds of events, political ads. You know, you all know this. So we have had a lot of discussion about how Facebook has been playing with us a bit and making it very difficult for conservatives. But do we have any real proof of that? You know, I met with Facebook, I think, twice now with others, and we've been in their headquarters talking to them about, you know, what they're doing, and we've been assured that, no, they're trying to be, you know, kind of observe or respect the First Amendment rights of free speech. But we find that that's not practically true. And now there's a whistleblower who's come forward, courtesy of Project Veritas, to tell us what he's been seeing. His name is Zach McElroy, and he joins us this morning. Good morning, Zach.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Hey, Zach, help me to understand. I kind of know what your job was, but what was your official title?
My official title was a content moderator. They also call him process executive at Cognizant, doing contract work for Facebook.
Okay, so, all right. People use Facebook, but they don't really know, I don't think. I'm sure they don't. How it works that... How could it be that millions of people are on your platform, and yet there's this group of people that we see in the undercover videos, which we're going to get to, have the bandwidth, you know, to edit or censor anything, given the volume of things that come into the platform?
Well, certainly there are thousands of people just like I was, who are doing this content moderation work. There are countless posts that are reported on the platform every day. And certainly it takes an army, so to speak, of individuals to sift through all of that.
So give us an idea, like when it's working, when you say you're a content moderator, I'm assuming that's like the official policies of, violent speech, pornographic, I don't know what the guidelines are, but so you have like a Ten Commandments of Facebook where you apply those restrictions and edit content accordingly, correct? Is that what it's supposed to be?
Yeah, precisely. There is the public policy, which you can see on the terms and conditions on Facebook, and the internal policy, which is slightly different for us content moderators. And yes, we're seeing all the posts that are reported, and we're monitoring them accordingly with the policy which is laid out before us.
And so, but Zach, so people actually then help you, though, because they flag posts that they find personally objectionable, and that's kind of what gets your attention. Pardon?
Well, it's twofold. There are people who report the posts physically, and there are also bots. Facebook has algorithmic bots that automatically report some content as well. So the job of the content is twofold.
Okay, I get it. And one of the things that you have said in your interview with James was that it was your observation, for instance, that 75% to 80% sent of Republicans in the queue, and you're going to have to explain this to us, were flagged or targeted. What are you talking about, and what would that mean?
Right. So there is a queue of posts that they deliver to us content moderators called the Civic Harassment Queue. This is essentially a stream of posts that are culled automatically from the pages of politicians, journalists, people in the political sphere, and the intention is to provide a random selection of the posts and comments made on these pages for us to review and sort of make sure that everything's going well, nobody's harassing people, nothing bad is going on in these comment sections. And I observed that although this is supposed to be a random selection of posts from throughout the political sphere, I observed that there were an awful lot of Republican and conservative pages in this queue. I observed two-thirds, up to 70%, and even some days maybe even 80% of the posts in that queue were from Republican and conservative pages, very odd for something that's supposed to be a random generation.
So you took it a step further, and you actually went undercover, so to speak, with the people that you worked with, the other content moderators. And I want to play just a portion, if I could, Zach, of what you recorded, and then you can maybe tell us, kind of describe to us what was happening there. This is clip 9. Let's listen.
Let me run something by you. You know that civic harassment queue that we've been in lately?
Yeah.
Is it just me, or is it like all Republicans in there?
Yeah, it's all Republicans. But a lot of it comes off of Trump's page specifically.
Yeah, because I see like a Bernie post, and then I'll see like five Trump posts in a row.
Yeah, it looks straight Republican related. Like, I love our president. Why are we getting this?
Steve Grimmett is a content moderator for Facebook in Austin, Texas.
It's a very progressive company who's very anti-MAGA.
I know that Facebook does have a Trump rule where they still allow him on the platform even though he says things that if anyone else said it.
And that's the fortunate thing is, even if he does say something, if it gets repeated, we can at least get the average Joe. Mm-hmm. But it goes back to our discussion earlier. It's hard when you've got the top person in the country, that's his MO. But, you know, Facebook's done a lot better job of at least policing the mimickers and the mockingbirds that come after Trump.
I assume your coworkers were deleting a lot of Trump.
Nobody likes Trump in this website.
You don't leave any go, do you? Like, if you see a conservative post, you just get rid of it.
Yes.
Right.
I don't give no f**ks. I'll delete it.
Good.
And they'll get salty. It's mostly
like, even if it's not, even if it's in policy, like, you're deleting that, right?
Yeah, I don't give no f**ks. It's like 1 week left. What are they going to do? Like,
right.
Send me to OIP? I don't give a f**k.
You told me that you just whack all the conservative posts and just gone, right?
No, honestly, like every time, like half the time when I delete people for like, you should be on a watch list, dude.
Yeah. Seriously.
So, Zach, by the way, we are talking with Zach McElroy. He is a Facebook whistleblower, and we're going to talk about, you know, his particulars in just a second. But, Zach, that was you interacting with people that you work with, as I understand it, right? Was that a surprise to hear that they are pulling away, you know, taking down posts from Trump supporters, from Republicans? Did that surprise you in any way?
Well, unfortunately, it's not. I would say that it's a kind of a matter of course that the workforce tends to be less leaning because the people who hired for this job are hired in blue states and blue cities. So it's kind of a matter of course that the workforce would primarily be liberal-leaning, and certainly if you have a large majority of the workforce is liberal-leaning, perhaps the more extreme end of them will be willing to go rogue and do things like this, which you've seen.
You know, we started out with this clip of Mark Zuckerberg when he was testifying before Congress. He said a lot of other things, but one of the main themes that I remember, and I know you do too, is that he promised, and he basically said it in that clip, I don't know if he held his hand up, but he said, we're not going to be censoring political ads. We're going to let a free flow of, you know, political campaigning within the guidelines on our Facebook platform. Would you go so far as to say he was lying?
Well, it certainly seems that way, the footage that we've seen regarding the content moderators themselves, but also more concretely and objectively, the policies. The policies are sort of laid bare, and they speak for themselves. I'm not a judge. I can't say if he lied under oath, but I would say that the content probably speaks for itself, and I'll let you decide.
You know, just to kind of underscore your point on that, Zach, I know I don't need to tell you, this is a different area of Facebook, but after having met with them, several of us in a coalition, we were very, let's just say, gut punched when we saw the committee that they chose to oversee. I don't know what they call the committee; can't recall, but it's a council committee, something of 20, and it was just a whole series of leftists. It was radical leftists internationally. Who they chose to oversee content. So while they were promising us, you know, that they were going to be fair and treat conservatives fairly, this is the kind of committee and kind of personnel they chose to oversee. So it comports with your theory that something's rotten here in Denmark. I want to talk to you about your own circumstances. Was there a particular event that caused you to be so motivated that you would actually, you know, it's a pretty big deal to record your colleagues and then to come public like this? Was there something that happened that was the catalyst for this?
Yes, I knew things were wrong immediately upon entering the training. 4 weeks, almost a month-long training where they disseminated the policy, explained all these things to me, and I knew most of the things that were wrong right away. Certainly, I, being a conservative moving into the job, I already knew something would be wrong, and I saw the proof laid out before me. But I thought to myself, well, I have to do something, but what can I do? I couldn't possibly leak these documents on the internet or anywhere. Would gain no traction, probably nobody would notice, and then I would probably stick my neck out for no reason. And I couldn't go to New York Times, I couldn't go to The Verge, and they would probably rat me out to Facebook. So really Project Veritas is the only place that does this kind of stuff where I can come forward and feel safe in doing so. So although it took some months, I had a chance meeting with Eric Cochran, the Pinterest whistleblower. He gave a speech, and I was inspired to just say, oh, why not? I'll try it anyway. And I gave him a business card, and we, within a few weeks, were talking. They were very interested, and we started rolling right away.
Well, it's interesting because at least maybe half a dozen of you now who have come out of Silicon or the social media sphere. Zach Vorteis came out of Google, was our guest probably 6 months ago, maybe a year. It's a dangerous thing to do this, Zach. And so I'm assuming you're not working with Facebook anymore. Is that correct?
Oh, no. The company Cognizant, they had laid off all of their employees and shut all their offices at the end of February. So it's been since February, actually.
But, I mean, are you saying, was that a temporary layoff because of the virus, or are you officially out of a job?
Well, it was actually before the virus took off. It was actually kind of a 1-2 punch for me because I got laid off and then the virus really hit, and that made it very difficult for me to find reemployment. And indeed, at the moment, I am still unemployed. It's been very difficult.
No, I'm sure it is. Do you have a family, Zach?
I do, yes.
All right. Well, let me just say, you know, one of the things that a lot of people are doing is setting up GoFundMe pages. Have you done that?
Indeed, I with great humility, because I prefer to work for my money. In the wake of this in this unique sort of situation and circumstance, GoFundMe has been set up, and I've been so utterly humbled to see the vast support that I've received in the wake of this. And yes, the GoFundMe is, I think, GoFundMe.com/expose Facebook. And it's just been incredible. It's been incredible in the last 24 hours what's been going on.
Okay, well, we'll put that link on our Facebook page, too, GoFundMe.com/expose Facebook. We'll put that on our Facebook page, too, Zach, assuming they'll keep it up. But here's the thing, Zach. I would say that there is a great need for your skills. In conservative circles, I think certainly on Capitol Hill, we saw, you know, in all the many hearings, we saw the ignorance of our senators and congressmen. Not all of them, but most of them, clueless. And so there is a place for you, and I hope you land in a good one. What do you hope? Let me just ask you another philosophical. We just have a couple of minutes left. Do you find that there are there really that few? I know the answer to this, but I'm asking: are there really that few young men of your age who are conservatives? Are they that hard to find that Facebook could not populate in girls, people who have more viewpoints than just those of the left? Are they really not available?
Oh, certainly not. I think going back to what I said earlier, I think the reason that this is the way it is because they hire in substantially blue states and cities. I think they have to sort of consider that there's a whole other side to the country that maybe you can get a unique perspective on. But it seems to be the case that maybe they don't want that perspective.
Well, I'd say it's very dangerous, and I know that you agree, and that's one of the reasons you came out. I want to just mention one other story quickly, and that is that image of President Trump. It's an image. It's not his real picture. It says blank Trump, the vulgar word that we can't say, and it has a person with a knife at his neck. And you said that normally that would not pass standards, but Facebook issued some kind of an okay for you guys to leave that up. Is that right?
Yes, horrifyingly and dangerously, I think. There is an image of Trump having his throat slit at a Portland art museum gallery, and they decided to leave that up, I guess because it's a form of artistic expression or something like that. But curiously, a cartoon image of Elmer Fudd shooting Beto O'Rourke when he came for his guns was to be deleted for violating the terms and conditions, and yes, it's all so silly.
Yeah, it is silly, but it's also very dangerous. And we have an
Absolutely.
Election coming up, which will determine so many things. We see our country in such turmoil. And Facebook is controlling what we can say to each other. And so the only way we're going to stop it is to speak the truth. And I know that you feel that way, Zach. I've heard you say that on tape, and I'm with you. Zach McElroy. And by the way, it's GoFundMe.com/expose Facebook. Zach, God bless you and keep you, and hopefully we can talk to you again soon. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Hello, I'm Gary Robey, host of Call to Worship, heard each Sunday on American Family Radio. This one-hour program will lead you in a special time of worship and praise. We will focus on God's Word, spoken, and in music. Call to Worship has a different topic each week as we glorify God together. Be sure to join us at 5 a.m. Central each Sunday for a Call to Worship right here on American Family Radio.
Ryan DeFrady's secret agent is back.
What is it, boss? Ninjas? An army of robotic sharks?
Ryan and his mom, or partner, overcome obstacles.
Hang in there, honey!
And outlaws.
I'm ready.
In some very unlikely settings. Kids from 6 to 12 will love these animated adventures. And they'll hardly know they're learning about forgiveness, telling the truth, and respecting authority.
You can do it, Mom!
Available now at afastore.net.
What is the source of America's greatness? My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Minute. Alexis de Tocqueville, a 19th century French political thinker and philosopher, had this exact same question. On the heels of the French Revolution, he came to America in 1831 to investigate America's ascendancy. In doing so, he found that America's greatness did not lie in her economic system. It did not lie in her banking system, nor did it lie in her educational system. He found America's pulpits aflamed with righteousness was the source of America's greatness. He opined that America is great because she is good. But when America ceases to be good, she will cease to be great. Let us pray for a restoration of the flame of righteousness in our pulpits.
Listen each weekday from 5 to 6 p.m. Central for the Hamilton Corner with Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
Brian Fisher here with today's Life and Liberty Minute. In the darkest days of England's lonely stand against Nazi Germany, Winston Churchill inspired his nation to keep the faith and refuse to surrender to the forces of evil. We are in a moment like that today in America. The satanic forces of evil are throwing everything they have at any man who dares to speak the truth, who dares to confront the malicious destroyers sent against everything noble, right, and true by the enemy of our souls. It's time to screw our courage to the sticking point and heed Churchill's call in these dark and dangerous times. Never give in. Never give in. Never, 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 never. In nothing, great or small, large or petty, never yield to force, never yield to the apparently overwhelming might of the enemy. Carry on.
Catch Brian Fisher on Focal Point, weekday afternoons at 105 Central on American Family Radio.
This is Frank Gaffney with the Secure Freedom Minute. A defining issue for our time is the fact that the Chinese Communist Party is our enemy. For example, the CCP has been waging unrestricted warfare on this country for decades with devastating effects for our economy, industrial base, middle class, and national security. The virus the CCP deliberately unleashed on us has killed over 100,000 Americans so far with no end in sight, etc., etc. Yet, despite such evidence, we continue to allow the communist Chinese to underwrite such activities by tapping our capital markets for trillions of dollars. On Monday, our Committee on the Present Danger of China warned Senate leaders that Securities and Exchange Commission Chairman Jay Clayton has been an enabler of that lunacy. We need to end, not perpetuate, this practice and remove, not promote, those who think we can safely do otherwise. This is Frank Gaffney. Learn more at presentdangerchina.org.
Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
From a new executive order freezing visas for foreign workers to a trip to the border in battleground Arizona, President Trump is taking his signature issue from 2016 and pushing it right back into the spotlight.
Is the most powerful and comprehensive border wall structure anywhere in the world.
President Trump marking a milestone in his campaign promise from 4 years ago, the completion of more than 200 miles of his border wall.
The 220 miles of wall system we have in right now are 220 new miles of wall system that gives us an enhanced capability that we never had.
The acting commissioner of U.S. Customs and Border Protection says they're on pace to complete about 500 miles by the end of the year.
On top of that, the president says the number of illegal border crossings is down 84% from this time last year, and illegal crossings from Central America are down 97%.
97%? I would say sounds pretty good.
A plus.
You sure it's 97, right?
Yes, sir.
But former Vice President Joe Biden says today's trip to the border is nothing more than, quote, a distraction from Donald Trump's failed response to combat the spread of COVID-19.
Okay, Sandy Rios with you. You know, this is the kind of the neglected topic. There have been so many things happening when it comes to immigration, border enforcement, building the wall, but it's gotten lost, as have so many other important things. Even the discussion of China on this show, which is probably one of our greatest problems, it's just swallowed up in the headlines. But so much is happening that I've invited Ken Cuccinelli, who is the acting director of the U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services, to join us this morning. In his very precious time, he's agreed to do that. Ken, thanks for joining us.
Always a pleasure to be with you, Sandy.
Nice to hear your voice. Let's talk about the border wall, because that's the thing that happened yesterday. You know, there was some comment made by some commentator or some setup that nothing had happened on the border wall. The president had promised and hadn't been delivered. What is the truth about where we are with building a border wall?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. A lot of them in the mainstream media have this agenda that I don't have to tell you about. But I saw on Twitter yesterday an MSNBC reporter, not a wild-eyed right-winger by any means, saying, whatever you want to call this wall, what's here now is new and huge. And there's over 200 miles of it. We're over 216 miles now. And we're doing almost or around a mile a day of construction, and that's accelerating. So that's why we got to 100 miles at the beginning of January. We're now 6 months later at 200 miles. I fully expect us to get to 300 miles in the same season. I expect that we'll cross that mark in the summer.
Wow.
So
that's
a huge impediment to illegal immigration and drug flows.
I'm curious about something. You know that all the discussion, I know you do, about prototypes and that, you know, they were trying out different, people had submitted different plans. Did the border wall end up being any of those prototypes, or is it varying in different places? You know, what can you say
about
that?
It's a pretty standard design with the bollard wall, as it's often called, which lets the agents see through it so that they have a tactical advantage on people trying to come into the country, and the surveillance and the road network that's built with it. So that's why we say a whole wall system allows very fast response. It allows advance notice, and it helps keep officers safe. It doesn't just keep people out, but it helps us have our officers do their job in a safer environment. And that's obviously very important to us. I know it's important to you. And
sure.
And as these people protect us, this is one of the ways we protect them.
Don't you find it incredibly ironic that as these anarchists are setting up these zones in various cities, the first thing they do is set up a border? Just saying. I mean, that's what they do. They drag these fences around.
Yeah, no, I've been
around.
Saying the same thing. Border security is important to them when they're doing it, just not when Donald Trump's doing it.
Exactly. So what effect do you think has this? I think we heard in the clip a few minutes ago with Kristen Fisher some stats on who's getting across, but how we were out of control a year ago. So where are we now with illegal immigrants coming across the border?
So, a year ago, last May, was the biggest single month we've had in the Trump administration. There were 144,000 people crossing, overwhelmingly from Central America. You had lots of families, very logistically difficult to contend with. Now what we have is since mid-March, we have a CDC health order on the border, and we're effectively, for 80%+ of the people coming across, we're enforcing public health law rather than immigration law, because we're trying to avoid letting COVID get any worse in our border communities and across the country. And that is allowing us to return over 80% of the people who cross that border in under 2 hours, which is just incredible, frankly.
That is incredible.
Under 2 hours.
Yeah.
And last month we had like 23,000 crossers, down from 144,000, and they're overwhelmingly Mexican, so instead of Central American. So very, very big change thanks to policies the president's put in place.
And I want to point out, according to Daniel Horowitz, he's reporting that the biggest factor driving most of the COVID cases, certainly in the Southwest, are a rise of people coming across from the border bringing it. He talks about what's happening in California, Arizona, and Texas. So there's a it's not just that you're using that as a device to keep people from coming in. It is a serious problem that people with infections with COVID, real infections, are coming across the border, and that's why that needs to be applied. Let's talk about the president's executive order, because it's pretty incredible, Ken, and that's, you know, that suspension of visas through the end of the year. Tell us about what that means to people, what that was all about, and what it means to us.
Well, it's big, Sandy. There's a lot to it. I mean, what people have been focusing on is the president has paused incoming green card recipients and a bunch of temporary work visas until for the rest of the calendar year 2020, and that's going to clear up over 500,000 jobs, I should say, clear out, and keep them open for Americans at a time when we've had a sudden spike of unemployment, up into double digits of unemployment, tens of millions of Americans losing their jobs, and the president is putting American workers first. This is what America First looks like in this space, and he's doing exactly that. But beyond that, on a more permanent basis, he has also instructed us to implement extensive and long-needed reforms to the high-tech visa program so that Americans are more competitive again, so that the system can't be abused to displace Americans. You know, the most infamous example was the Disney employees having to train their foreign replacements, and that will go away under this president. And there are others as well, using biometrics for people coming in so that we have more security and doing security checks beforehand. And we're going to stop giving out work permits to people who are not here legally, even if we parole them in or do other things, but they will not be eligible to work. And we want to take away all those incentives for people to cheat the system.
You know, when I was in on radio in Chicago for 10 years, this was in the late 90s, maybe right before I came to D.C. in 2001, but I will never forget getting calls, not a ton, but I got a few calls from some of the major companies, Motorola and others, in Chicago, people telling me about having to, this is the first time I'd heard it, my husband has been laid off, they're bringing in someone from India or China to take his job, and he's being required to train this person to do his job, and he has to train them or he will lose his severance. But this is the first time I'd ever heard it. This has become normal practice in major corporations, hasn't it, Ken?
Well, and that's exactly what one of the reforms the president has ordered will get rid of. The way that loophole works is the question is asked, will this incoming foreign worker displace an American worker? But where the analysis takes place is at the company that's bringing the worker in. So there are what we call body shops who bring in bunches of H-1Bs, and they're not displacing Americans within those companies. The purpose of that company is to subcontract batches of them out into other companies, and that's what you're describing. And there's no comparison about whether they displace those American workers. We're going to start looking at those other companies so that they can't, so the American workers can't be displaced.
One other thing that, well, at least one other that I know about that I think is really significant, as you have said many times and when we've talked in the past, Ken, when you bring foreign unskilled workers in droves into the country and businessmen are able to pay them, and this is what business does. They need to get labor as cheap as they can. That's one of their biggest costs for their overhead. They don't pay them very much, and the foreign workers are happy to work for hardly anything, but that drives down the wages for American workers who cannot survive on those wages. You're trying to do something in this executive order. Can you explain what the president's doing with this?
So, you know, it's interesting what the president did on Monday. The concepts have broad bipartisan support. I mean, Bernie Sanders, Durbin, Paul Krugman, then Senator Barack Obama all talked about how these programs can depress wages. And that's particularly true at a point in time of high unemployment like we have now and rather suddenly versus the Trump economy we were in, say, in February with 3.5% unemployment. makes a big, big difference in how you look at that question. Because in one situation, labor is hard to come by because we've reached near full employment. In the other, Americans are suddenly out of work and lots of Americans need jobs. So how you view the entire aperture of people coming in for work in this country as foreign nationals really should be heavily governed and influenced by what's going on in our economy right now. What are the opportunities for Americans? And that was the president's first priority in issuing this executive order.
All right. Just a word about DACA. I mean, it's a huge subject, but we don't have time to get into it a lot. But the Supreme Court really dealt a blow to the president. The President Obama illegally established this Dreamer Act, so-called Dreamer Act, or whatever, executive order. And then the president, as in Trump, tried to rescind it. And the Supreme Court, via John Roberts, said that he couldn't do that. So where are we with that, Ken, from your perspective?
So as the president made public Friday morning with his tweet where he let people know he'd instructed us at DHS to rewrite that memo and do the wind down correctly. And I say that a little bit bitterly because of the correctly is deemed by the Supreme Court in an area where the DACA itself program was illegal. And as Justice Thomas said for himself and two other justices, how can you require a legal process to wind down an illegal undertaking by government? It should just be able to be canceled. And the other six justices didn't even address the question of legality. They sidestepped it entirely and really punted. They all said that the president can wind down this program. And Friday morning, the president ordered us to do just that the day after the ruling. I talked to him very shortly after the ruling, and he feels pretty strongly about moving forward on this. And to the extent there's going to be any accommodation, then the Democrats are going to have to come back to the table. They walked away to try to use these people, and there are people involved here, of course. These are human beings, as political pawns in the 2018 elections. And they walked out, I think it was in September of 2018. So the question is, do they want to keep using them as political pawns, or do they want to actually try to solve the problem like the president does?
Ken, I know you have worked your heart out since you got into that position. You were the former Attorney General for Virginia. You did so much for the country. I could name so many things. Your pushback on Obamacare, and a successful pushback, by the way, very, very unique ways of targeting and undermining its longevity. But now it's all about immigration with your job. Would you say, this may be a politically incorrect question, you can correct me, would you say that this...
Yeah, me.
The so-called COVID crisis, I'm the skeptic, has really actually probably benefited our immigration policies. Would you say that's true, that you've been able to kind of clean house and kind of mop some things up because it has affected unemployment? I'm not saying it's a good thing. I'm just saying it might have had a good effect with this. Would you agree?
Well, I mean, trying to maintain public health on the border using public health law instead of immigration law is easier to do in the sense that we can turn people back around to Mexico because they're cooperating with us, by the way, very quickly. So in that sense, we have smoothed the process out. But that the goal of that was to keep these people out of very open detention facilities of CBP. You remember the pictures last year with thousands of people in them. Can you imagine COVID in there?
Hey, listen, thank you for everything you're doing on behalf of this country. I know how hard you work, and I just personally thank you, and I know people do also. Ken Cuccinelli, thank you so much. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.